If I could just ask a general question before we get into some of the details that you sketched out. Bruce, can you please tell us how you got into mixing, how you evolved from a musician and a player to a recording engineer, and ultimately how you became a quote-unquote mixer? I'll quote you on saying something to the extent of, you recently just started having a clue about how to mix. And if you could put that into perspective in your own evolution, starting as a musician into a mixer.
Sure. Actually, to be honest, it really wasn't an evolution. I like to say I've been riding the two bicycles of being a musician and being an audio enthusiast, you know, recording engineer, producer, person in studio, really pretty much since I started being serious about playing music. My initial foray into being a musician started when I was in single digits. I had piano lessons when I was a kid. I took up drums when I was in fourth grade and played those in school. And by the time I was in high school, I was playing guitar and bass and this and that. And I bought my first reel-to-reel tape recorder when I was in high school, probably when I was a sophomore, maybe around that period of time. And there was a really great audio shop in the general vicinity in which I lived. And much to my surprise, as an older enthusiast, my very first tape recorder was a pretty cool machine. It was a Revox. Mm-hmm. It was a stereo two-track machine that, you know,
could do sound on sound, right?
You could do sound on sound, yeah. That pretty quickly led to the, you know, one of the four-track TIAC reel-to-reels. When I was in my early 20s, I rented the basement in a house and turned it into a studio with a four-track machine and did, you know, started to cut my teeth at that point. So before I ever actually played a professional gig, I was recording. And, you know, the two evolved alongside each other. And a lot of it had to do with, there are those amongst us, you know, yourself being one, other people that you and I both know, being an example of this as well, who got bit by the bug early and just had a natural affinity for putting images, audio images together. You know, I started collecting gear early and I was actively playing in bands and that kind of thing. I was always the guy that ended up recording the band because it came naturally to me and it didn't come as naturally to the people around me. So there was no evolution. It's been a constant companion, recording, being a musician. As far as the comment that I made about not really feeling like I had arrived at being a good mixer, I felt like by the time I reached my 40s, I finally really did start to get it and really started to understand the difference between presenting a, you know, a credible verite version of musical events that occurred versus creating art with a mix. It boils down to, you know, the thing that is the hardest to impart to other people is how to build emotion and passion and artistry into a mix. I mean, it's I've known a lot of guys that are capable live sound engineers who just, that's where it starts and finishes. There's not this attention to the emotional rudder steering the work. As I matured, I finally kind of got to this place where I could transcend the, well, so that the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. That's the thing that you have to aspire to.
Transcending the technique might be a potential fill in the blank of that sentence.
Yeah, I think that's applicable for sure.
It's similar to being a musician where we master the technique and then we can perform and take things to a higher level emotionally.
Exactly.
When we look at mixing, you said some really wonderful explanations as far as the artistry and the emotional aspect of mixing on that level. And then there's just the pure technical level. From a teaching standpoint, the technical level is something that can be very tangible. This is something that can be taught. And if students pay attention and they practice and they get all their ducks lined up in a row, they can actually become competent in the technical side of things. And that can help open up into the artistic side of things too.
Right. I mean, if you think about the way that crafts guilds evolve or have evolved over time, the studio model is actually a really great one where you have, you know, apprentices, journeymen, and hopefully eventually someday masters, right? Mm. And in fact, you know, if you think about what it used to be like, it, and it's still like this in some studios, but there aren't so many studios that can do this anymore. But, you know, you have interns where, you know, you just put your foot into the pool and start to, you know, be around other people doing interesting work and you get an idea. And then, you know, eventually if you are competent enough and have the right demeanor and outlook, maybe the first engineers will start giving you assist jobs and, you know, maybe you can work your way up the ladder and meet people and eventually end up getting, you know, the primary spot in the chair and then hopefully someday down the road actually start making art of it. But you do need, there are many things that you can teach about the technical end of it. There is a lot to know about the craft, but ultimately, in my humble opinion, it is experientially gained knowledge that is the only tool that really leads toward developing the artistic side of it. You know, you have to do the work. You have to understand how the techniques translate into recorded images. And then you have to understand how those images fit together in order to make something interesting happen with them. I mean, other than, you know, just, I'm not discounting documenting what I would call a verite event, you know, like film verite, where you're essentially trying to capture a real event and not stylize it. Yeah, I mean, you can get there pretty fast as a audio engineer.
For example, you know, recording a symphony orchestra or a choir or a jazz quartet with a stereo space pair, record at the proper level, do a basic EQ compression mastering, and it's a done deal type of thing.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Which I would equate with being equivalent to being a live sound mixer.
Right.
You know, yeah. where you're essentially capturing a performance and not stylizing it. But I think for most of the famous mixing engineers, and certainly for myself as well, being able to sculpt audio images into a satisfying artistic experience is a whole different thing.
I think it's a really good point that part of it is simply just logging in the hours, just accumulating the experience, as you articulated. You know, the concept of 10,000 hours to become moderately competent in a given discipline?
Absolutely.
Yeah. One time I got out a calculator and I started guesstimating how many hours I've logged in the studio. Mm. And it got like, it was quickly way above 10. This is when I was very young. It was like, it got kind of depressing on how many hours I've actually logged in.
Hell, I remember doing 10,000 hours a year at Dragon Studios.
Really? Yeah. We're kind of joking, but I mean, like, so what is 16 hours a day times 30?
I'll tell you what, you know, I am so fortunate to have been, you know, the time that I spent with American Music Club led to so many opportunities to work at a super high level in the industry, you know, working in LA, working with really great engineers and producers. And I've always, you know, and I know that you have been of the same, you've been cut from the same cloth. You understand that this work does not do itself. I have to remind some of my clients sometimes, you know, this work isn't doing itself. We have to do this, right? But the thing that I found working in LA, you know, where budget is not nearly the kind of issue that it usually is here in the Bay Area, those are some hard-working sons of guns down there.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to have focus like a laser beam, and you have to have the willingness to arrive at the studio early in the day, maybe answer an email once in a while if it's really important, maybe grab a bite every now and then. But other than that, you're glued to it because, you know, especially if you're on a project that has a deadline and there are other people who've put money up. The whole deal is that I've been on projects with platinum award-winning engineers and producers, and, you know, 150 vocal takes to comp one vocal track, not a problem, you know, seen it and done it.
That's one thing that's always impressed me too, working with incredibly successful, genius level celebrity artists, is their work ethic has just been amazing.
No, it is true though that especially super high level successful artists are driven. It's a drive that just does not quit, and that's how you get there. I mean, I can't think of any examples of people I've worked with who didn't deserve the success that they've gotten.